This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash, and later on to Building Bridges, Revitalizing the Labor Movement.
With Elaine Bernard from the Harvard Trade Union Program. But first, Asaf Adib, National Coordinator of the Workers' Advice Center, which is an active association that has distinguished itself not only by finding jobs for unemployed Arab workers in Israel, but also by placing their issue on the public agenda.
Asaf, for the last month, the Workers' Advice Center has been fighting an attack against you by the Registrar of Nonprofits in Israel. If you could talk about that.
The Workers' Advice Center, which has been undergoing in the last 3 or 4 years some kind of procedure of investigation from the part of the Registrar of Nonprofit Associations in Israel under the allegations that WAC is not doing the work that it is supposed to do. It means it is not doing its role as an organization that supports workers. Instead of this, the Workers' Advice Center is actually a camouflage, a channel to push money and resources to a political party called the Organization for Democratic Action. This kind of accusation has been investigated in the last 3 years, and the investigator of the registrar actually ran through all the papers, all the accounts, every piece of paper, everything in our administration was reviewed. And just recently, the decision on this investigation report has been made by the registrar to start a process of dismantling the WAC because supposedly they found out that these allegations were correct.
I think it's helpful if we backtrack and find out and just alert our listeners to the actual work of WAC and then try to trace why this latest affront has occurred.
I think it is important to understand that the allegations are, on the face of it, are absurd. Because WAC is very active regarding the rights of Palestinian workers and Arab workers who are citizens of Israel and migrant workers, we feel that this harassment, this decision, is in a sense an attempt to stop our effective work in defense of our workers by using false pretexts. And because the registrar himself and the report of the investigation actually acknowledges the effectiveness and the forcefulness of the work of WAC, but they are using different pretexts to explain why this work is not actually what is supposed to be the work of WAC. Just to give you one example, WAC is doing a lot of work in defense of illegal workers in Israel. The registrar accuses WAC that in doing this work, it is actually making an offense against the law, meaning that to defend illegal workers...
And who are illegal workers?
Workers are migrants from different countries and Palestinian workers from the West Bank and Gaza who are entering Israel without permits and are being arrested and detained, many times brutalized, arrested without warrants, not giving a possibility to have a lawyer. Some of them are not even given the possibility to prove that they are legal. But the harassment is so brutal and disregard of the rights of workers, not just in terms of police and arresting them, but also on the job, the exploitation of these people who are absolutely weak. They don't have the legal status to fight back. So they're accusing WAC of doing this work, and at the same time they're accusing WAC of being camouflage for a political party, but not to speak of the fact that to defend illegal workers is not only legal right, but it's also legal obligation. And it actually, the obligation under the conventions of the ILO, the labor conventions, to defend each worker, every worker, regardless of the fact that he's legal or illegal, should have equal rights. And many organizations, many special clinics to help illegal workers with health situation, and all this will be a contravention of the law if the position of the registrar against WAC is accepted. But the absurd thing here, that if WAC is actually just helping a political party to get elected, how come it deals with illegal workers who have no right to vote? So it's a contradiction in the allegations. The other thing that WAC is doing, and it's actually concentrating on, and with, is placing and opening jobs for Arab workers in the Israeli construction firms. And WAC has local collective agreements or planned collective agreements with 15 leading companies in Israel. It has a protocol of agreement with the Israeli Association of Contractors. What are the terms of the employment of Arab construction workers? So it is regularly in the Knesset Committee, the Parliament Committee on Migrant Workers. It has been invited to present its position in front of the Government Committee on the situation of labor force in the construction branch. So it is absolutely absurd to say that WAC is not doing its work. It is doing its work, and because it is doing a very effective work to defend and to present the situation of our workers, it is being attacked.
What kind of allies do you have within Israel, both in terms of your ongoing work and this most recent attack upon the Workers' Advice Center?
It is important to note that the process here is a long one. It means that there is a declaration of intent from the registrar to start a process of dismantling WAC, but this process would have to go to district court and will have to get an approval of the district court before it will be implemented. It means that WAC has a possibility, legally speaking, to oppose this decision, to bring all the proofs, all the evidence, everything in the court, and there will be a court decision, first of all, district court, and then, if it is a negative one, WAC will have the possibility to appeal to the Supreme Court. So it's a long process, and all this process will be supported by a public campaign inside Israel and internationally. Before we go to the allies, first of all, we have hundreds of workers who are organized in the framework of WAC, and these workers and their families depend, in a way, let's say, on the legitimate position, the legitimate existence of WAC as an organization that is recognized, and the agreements it has reached with companies are still there. So these workers are, and the hundreds of members of WAC are the first people to go, and we are going on the street in Tel Aviv to demonstrate and to say, well, we are here, we want our organization to stay, and we will not allow anybody to stop it from defending and protecting our rights.
Asaf, why is this happening? And what is the political party that you relate to that is impacted by this?
It's important just to mention that there are a lot of associations, menstrual workers, associations who defend the Arab population in Israel, associations who are opposed to discrimination and racism in Israel. Many people who are very worried about the situation in Israel, the rise of the right wing, the rise of forces who are opposed to democratic rights and equality, who are supporting the right of WAC to continue its important work. There was a good article today in the Haaretz newspaper on the attempt to dismantle WAC. Is very important development in our public campaign. And what we are doing now is gathering a whole number of experts on law, Jewish and Arabs, inside Israel, in support of our work. We got some very good support from legal experts in Israel who reviewed the information. It means not just the principle of supporting our right to act freely and to continue our work, but also after we reviewed the whole legal case, the whole case of the registrar, reading all his 34 pages, just said that there's nothing in there, just a mere harassment without any legal ground for his. So said that our legal case is very, very strong. We also have a lot of support from trade unions internationally, and we are approaching the labor movement internationally to give the support to WAC, because it is very important that even if WAC is very small in comparison to Histadrut, it is an organization that stands up with Palestinian workers, with equality. It is part of, well, the movement of workers who are very active now, regaining the lost ground of the labor movement in opposition to the war, to globalization, and to the fact that workers have no future in this world.
And the party that is...
The party, your question in regarding to the party is called the ODA, the Organization for Democratic Action in Israel. In Arabic, it's called Da'am. And this party is a legitimate party, the party that ran in the Israeli elections. It's a party that is a left-wing, a Marxist, and it has not been able to get into the Knesset because of a minimum number of votes you need to get into the parliament. Also, in the report of the investigation, it is clear that what, let's say, the content, the real content of decision of the registrar against WAC is an attempt to delegitimize activists who were in the 80s part of the Palestinian struggle, were jailed for this for several years, and when they came out of jail, they were the people who initiated actually WAC. So So the subcontext, the subtext here, the things that they don't want to say, but actually they are putting it just for the judge and others to understand that these people, called the Sharara Nitzotz people, people from the 80s who were active in the Palestinian struggle, these people should not have the right to have associations, to be active in associations, because they have the history of the 80s, they were in jail. And this is a very dangerous thing. Actually, it's a McCarthyist type of thing. Well, you are a terrorist regardless what you do now. You are a terrorist, and because you are a terrorist, you're not allowed to act, you're not allowed to have an association, you're not allowed to do anything, regardless of what you do.
Asaf, are there any parts of the Israeli trade union, the Histadrut, the Federation, which support your activities?
A lot of, actually, the you have to understand that in situation in since several years, 10 years now, there are many, many organizations and associations that have been active in defense of migrant workers, Palestinian workers, precarious workers, Israeli workers of personal companies, manpower companies, who are doing a lot of active activity on the ground, as the Histadrut, in a sense, basically concentrates on defending of workers of the upper layers, the workers who have better salaries, and especially in the Jewish towns, in the Jewish society. Our work is very closely connected and in like a network of a lot of these organizations, and we have a lot of support from these people, as I mentioned before. Solidarity campaign is going on, a petition is going on, demonstration will be there. So we have a lot of friends and allies and people who support our work in the Arab community and in the, let's say, progressive Israeli community for our fight, and we are very confident that our case, legally speaking, is very strong. The accusations against WAC are baseless, and because we are doing so very clear, practical work in defense of workers and legitimate work, the authorities, the registrar, will not be able to go on with its plan to stop our work.
And lastly, how can people be supportive?
Well, first of all, I might mention that we have all the information in the website of WAC, which is www.workersadvicecenter.org. We're asking people, first of all, to sign a petition and to send protest letters to the Israeli embassy in the U.S. or consulate in their towns and cities. And especially we are approaching people who are active in the trade union movement to start a process where the labor movement in America put its pressure, put its force, not in defense of Israel, but in defense of workers and Jewish Arab organization inside Israel that fights for equality, that fights for real peace, that fights for the rights of all workers. And we feel that we deserve the support of people who are for democratic rights and for real peace in the Middle East.
Which side are you on?
Lots of issues in the labor movement, and we have to revitalize it. And we are going to hear Elaine Bernard, Harvard trade unionist, talk about what we can do. The current debate over direction for the labor movement is focusing on resources and structure. But Elaine Bernard, speaking at a conference on the future of the labor movement organized by Queens College Labor Resource Center, challenged unions to question their goals and direction and rely more on their diversity of membership to revitalize what some see as a dying movement. She also points to the successes enjoyed by the Canadian labor movement to illustrate how labor can become a movement. Elaine Bernard.
Well, I do think we've come a long way, though I must confess it's still a little tiring as a feminist. Whenever I come to a meeting, it's a bunch of guys standing around talking about their members. But they've moved forward. They're now talking about size, though I would point out that it's not the meat, it's the motion. And so that size is important, but there's a lot of things beyond size that are important. And what I would point out is that I really think that it's a failed discussion when we focus on structure first, because structure really needs to come after strategy. So you start with strategy. What is your strategy? And then your strategy determines your structure. And then your resources are allocated through your structure to implement your strategy. But this way we seem to be, everybody wants to quickly, let's talk structure and resources. Because if we start talking about strategy, we'll have differences. And so the second thing I think that's very important is that process really does matter. Process is what we're about. That's what a labor movement is about. It's not just, and the notion that, well, you know, as someone said, we don't say how to implement the changes, but we know where we want to wind up. Brothers and sisters, it's the discussion of how we'll go about change. It's the process that is democracy. Democracy is not an end. One day we vote and then bam, we're democratic. Goodbye. Sit down, shut up. It's the process of being in an everyday part of the decision-making body. So that I think that this notion of, and historically, what is their strategy been? Well, it's always been focused on how do we get workers' power. And we've tended to have two vehicles for doing that. One was set up in the workplace. It was seen as an industrial vehicle, unions. And the second was through labor-based political parties. We saw that we needed both power in the workplace, but we also needed it in the political arena. Historically, the types of vehicles we've created in the workplace have been varied, tremendously different. And even though legislation has tried to force us into forming unions along a particular version, what we understood is that unions are fundamentally about constructing a community of interests amongst workers. And smart people that we are, we also discovered that workers often have a bit of a community of interest in the workplace. Sometimes it's determined by skill, and that's craft unions. Sometimes it's determined by geography. You work in a common area. You work with folks in the same industry. So there's a number of reasons why folks already start with a community of interest, and what we try to do is construct a bigger, stronger community of interest. That's what unions do. That's one of the reasons why, in fact, the strength of the U.S., and I'd argue Canadian labor movement, has been that we've not tried to impose only one type of union, one size fits all, that we've recognized that we've had to have a number of different types. The second thing is on politics. I think that has been a major weakness. And the notion that we're going to throw more goddamn money at politics really scares the hell out of me. First, you've got to have a program before you start. Let's throw some more money at the bloody Democrats. I mean, that's really smart. To me, you've got to first have a political agenda. And when you got an agenda, it's really nice to have a vehicle to deliver that agenda. That one of the things that politics does is politics is about agenda setting. Labor movements are about agenda setting. So let's start by agenda setting in politics. Then have our money follow our strategy instead of dealing with existing parties and saying, you know, we're going to throw money at them and hope that when they're elected, they might be nice to us. You set the agenda, you will determine the political saliency. That's what the right does. They agenda set. They don't turn around. Now, let's think about agenda setting that the labor movement does. The labor movement, when it was founded in 1886, agenda set on what started as the 9-hour day, then turned into the 8-hour day, a terrific piece of agenda. Why? Because it's something that you win first for your members, but if you're going to hold on to it, you got to spread it around. Because you can't have one group of workers with 8 hours and everybody else working much longer hours. So to move it from collective bargaining into the wider, to socialize that demand, it's also an international demand. Is there a similar sort of thing that the labor movement could grab today? I think there is. I think health care for all is such a demand. That is something that we have the power to put on the public agenda, to use and to build and to talk to our members about, to get them to talk about, and to win and to be able to hold on to for ourselves. We need to spread it around. I think the most important thing that this debate has raised was this notion of it's the internal culture of the labor movement. How do we make this labor movement a movement where we can have democratic discussion and debate? I have to compliment SEIU for putting out some ideas about how they would change the labor movement, but I would disagree that you don't start with structure, you start with strategy. And a culture of debate and discussion in a labor movement starts not just with how we would structure locals, but it also starts with how we as a movement need to be contesting for power. I know I come from a foreign country, a very different country, one where when the labor movement dreams in technicolor, it doesn't seek to be able to slightly influence its masters. It wants to rule. And I think that a labor movement that starts with that belief, I think, is pretty fundamental. But to do that, I think we also need to be prepared, and I'm a little concerned that much of the discussion tends to focus on that there's one, even though we say, well, there's not one right, there is sort of one right way, one right strategy. Take the blue pill, take the red pill, take Valium, and, you know, you will win. It doesn't work that way. I think what we need is much more innovation, because on almost any instance, you know, you mentioned Walmart. We need $25 million to organize. No, we don't. We're already organizing Walmart in Quebec. Quebec has organized a couple of Walmarts. So maybe it's tactical. Maybe it's looking at there's two jurisdictions in North America where you get an automatic first contract, Quebec and Saskatchewan. Guess where Walmart's being organized? In Quebec and Saskatchewan, duh. And it's not taking $25 million. And it's being organized, not by professional organizers, but it's being organized by internal committees, because that's much more the Canadian labor movement's method. Also, you know, I think a discussion also requires a degree where we recognize that real debate doesn't include ultimatum. So real debate isn't about, here's the terms of the debate, please enter our debate, we'll tell you when you're not really in our debate, and therefore we don't have to answer those questions. And secondly, if you disagree with us, we're leaving. That's not a debate, that's an ultimatum. And you know, I mean, on the leaving issue, I gotta tell you, I'm probably a minority of one here, but that's not such a bad idea. The one place in North America, when is the location with the highest union density in North America? Quebec. And there are three national, we call them national in Quebec, it's a Canadian thing, three national labor federations in Quebec that have been competing for years. They work together. They occasionally shift members democratically. That is, you'd call it raiding. We call it the members determine they'd like to go somewhere else. And they, by majority, do shift our union. We have a novel notion that it's, in fact, the workers' right to choose what union will represent them, not the union leaders and not the state. And, in fact, you got the opportunity of tremendous innovation. And I think today what we need in the labor movement is much more of that innovation. And we have done some of it around new forms. I think of jobs with justice. I think of some of the open source unionism. I think of some of the minority unionism. I think, and I have to agree that I think this issue of how do we How do we make collective bargaining, collective bargaining rights, absolutely central to Americans' views of democratic rights? In my mind, collective bargaining is, though, a means to an end. And the first thing that workers start with is, in fact, the right to participate in decisions that affect you. And to do that, you need a vehicle. And without that vehicle, you cannot exercise rights. The vast majority of Americans, and we've seen this through polls, actually believe they have rights in the workplace. They actually do. The vast majority of Americans believe that there is just dismissal in the United States. They don't know that there isn't. And so our job is to show them that we can assist them in constructing a vehicle that breathes life into those rights. And how we do that, in my mind, is not about designing the perfect structure, but is, in fact, developing strategies that will vary tremendously from industry to industry, from region to region, from locale to locale, and we need to be strategic about it in the sense of looking at different jurisdictions the same way the right does. The right doesn't focus on our strength and bash us there. They start with our weakness and work up. It's about time we start looking North American-wide and start focusing, as we've done with Walmart, on, say, Quebec and Saskatchewan. Get a few collective agreements. Get a few entries into their finance. Understand. Show that workers at Walmart can win, that they can have health care, which they'll have because of Canada's single-payer system. Thank you.
And you were listening to Elaine Bernard from the Harvard Trade Union Program. And this has been Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report Special. And if you'd like to get in touch with Building Bridges, you can contact Mimi. That's M-I-M-I at buildingbridgesonline.org. That's Mimi, buildingbridgesonline.org. We'd love to hear from you.